Welcome to the KMUD News. I'm your news director, April Lewis, and I'm glad to be with you for this broadcast. In this episode, we have stories on debate over McKinleyville subdivision, updates on the MP18 fire in Hooper Valley, the Daryl Ray Jones court case, and this week's sports report. But first, some local alerts and updates. This is KMUD News. From the National Park Service. The National Park Service, in cooperation with California State Parks and Redwood Parks Conservancy, are excited to announce that Diana Heiss of Kansas City, Bobby Lee of Santa Ana, California, and Nick Vasquez of Oakland, California, have been selected as Redwood National and State Parks Fall 2026 Artists in Residence. During their residencies, the artists will immerse themselves in the landscapes of the parks, creating work inspired by the region's ancient forests, waterways, geology, and unique ecosystems. About the artists. Diana Heiss is a socially engaged, research-backed artist working at the intersections of ecofeminism, performance, and experimental lens-based practices. Her work takes the form of essay films, hand-stitched photo collages, immersive installations, and artist books. Heiss is a recipient of the Fulbright Fellowship, a Franklin Furnace Performance Art Fund grant, and a presidential fellowship at the American University in Cairo. Her work has been exhibited internationally, including at the Brooklyn Museum, Kenner Arts Center at Stanford University, and the Venice Arsenal, and her films have screened at festivals in the United States and abroad. A dedicated researcher and writer, Heiss is a tenured full professor of photography and filmmaking at the Kansas City Art Institute. She holds an MFA from the School of Visual Arts and a BA from Vassar College. Bobby Lee is a landscape photographer and book artist whose work explores the animacy of the natural world and the sense of geologic time revealed in exposed rock layers and other landforms. His photographic practice is rooted in the sensory experience of being in and interacting with the physical world, while his work in book arts and paper sculpture offers layered and interactive ways of engaging with photography. These artist books are held in permanent collections at the National Gallery of Art Library, the University of Richmond, and the University of Denver Special Collections. Nick Vasquez is a poet whose work is shaped by his experience living between Northern California's redwood and urban forests. He studied psychology and English at Humboldt State University and later earned a master's in developmental psychology. His poems have appeared in the Dewdrop, Toyon Literary Magazine, and The Right Launch, and he is a reader at Frontier Poetry. Vasquez is also a founder of Gray Hands Literary Magazine, a writing magazine and mentorship program for foster youth. His interests include hiking, baking, classical guitar, and exploring the natural world. Redwood National State Parks Artists in Residence Program invites artists to explore and interpret the unique landscapes of the park through their work. By connecting art with the environment, the program aims to inspire deeper public appreciation and stewardship for these treasured lands. From Mendocino County. The Mendocino Cannabis Division would like to share helpful information about what to expect during a CCBL site inspection. Site inspections provide an opportunity for staff to visit cultivation operations to verify that the site is consistent with the approved site plan and that all applicable requirements of Mendocino County Code Chapter 10A.17 are being met. During the inspection, staff may review items such as whether cultivation areas and other site features are consistent with the approved site plan, the location and size of approved cultivation areas, required setbacks and other site-specific requirements, whether structures are being used for commercial cannabis activities have obtained final building permits as applicable, and compliance with all relevant provisions of MCC Chapter 10A.17. To help CCBL holders prepare and know what to expect, the Mendocino Cannabis Division has developed an inspection checklist outlining items that may be reviewed during the inspection. Items on the checklist include fertilizer, pesticide storage, generator use and fuel storage, water sources and irrigation lines, and cumulative square footage of the canopy, among other items. You can contact the Mendocino Cannabis Division for more information at 707-234-6680. They encourage CCBL holders to review the checklist before their inspection and address any items that may need attention. Taking a few minutes to review your site beforehand can help make the inspection process go smoothly. From the city of Eureka, for Hoopa residents impacted by the Milepost 18 fire. We know the fire and heavy smoke are taking a toll. If you'd like to get away for a few hours, we invite you to come spend some time in Eureka. From now through the weekend, Hoopa residents can show an ID with a Hoopa address at each location to enjoy the Sequoia Park Zoo, which is offering free admission. Up to 4 children may accompany each adult with a Hoopa ID. The Mattaquette Bay Cruise, complimentary rides with a Hoopa ID. Space is limited, so please call 707-445-1910 to reserve your spot. The Morris Graves Museum of Art, free admission, plus 2 special events on Sunday, including Mini Masters, Sunday from noon to 2, story time, games, art activities, and a free book for families, along with wine and jazz on Sunday from 3 to 5 p.m., live music featuring Francis Vanek with the RLA Trio. And up next, our main stories. This is KMUD News. We have an update on the MP18 fire in the Hoopa Valley. KMUD News reports, the MP18 fire continues to burn in the Hoopa Valley. As of this recording, in the afternoon of Friday, August 14th, the Milepost 18 fire is estimated at 4,607 acres with 5% containment. There is an evacuation order for Zone HIA-E002-A, which is a wilderness zone. There are also evacuation warnings across the eastern and northern Hoopa Valley. Zone HIA-E002-A is north of Mill Creek Road, south of Coyote Creek and Hopkins Creek, west of North Fork Mill Creek, and east of Highway 96. Route 96, from 3.9 miles east to 8.3 miles east of Hoopa, is closed due to fire activity. Avoid the area and plan alternate routes. We spoke with Information Officer Kyle Zayer with the Interagency California One team in charge of fire operations to learn more of the current situation in Hoopa. He spoke first on an inversion pattern that has tempered the fire in the morning hours.
Yeah, so the inversion and the humidities were good this morning. Kind of kept things tempered up until about lunchtime. The inversion did lift, and so we are starting to see increased smoke and fire activity. But the morning provided us, while the atmosphere was kind of held in, kind of gave us an opportunity to try to extend some line and get around things better, plumb things out, and see how we do this afternoon with the winds. But the winds are starting to pick up this afternoon.
There's been an influx of new personnel to assist in the MP18 firefighting effort, with over 1,100 personnel now assigned to the incident.
So we had an influx of folks that were able to help out with structure protection down Mill Creek area and other areas. That's been helping, and we've been trying to keep them working around the clock to capitalize on any favorable conditions that we have.
The previously mentioned inversion layer that tempers the fire in the morning hours is a double-edged sword, as it prevents aircraft from working on the fire until the inversion layer lifts.
Now that it's cleared, I have been hearing and seeing more air traffic when the lid's on the inversion and they can't see, that puts not only the pilots but the folks on the ground at risk. And so if there's that inversion layer in the morning, it's good for work on the ground, but not in the air. And so if they can't see, they're not gonna fly. But like I said, that inversion lifted maybe an hour or two ago, and I have heard and seen a couple of them go, and that's been a pretty consistent pattern that as soon as it lifts, they get traffic on it and try to support the best they can.
We'll continue to keep KMUD listeners updated as the Milepost 18 fire in Hoopa Valley continues. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. Though it was originally approved 15 years ago, a McKinleyville subdivision's environmental review is being questioned by a county supervisor. Daniel Mintz reports.
An 80-lot subdivision in McKinleyville has gotten final map approval despite a supervisor's call for further environmental review. A final subdivision map and other land use mappings for McKinleyville's Beaupre Heights subdivision were approved at the August 11th Humboldt County Board of Supervisors meeting, an action that Supervisor Steve Madrone opposed. McKinleyville is in Madrone's district, and he said he's had a lot of constituents contact me about various concerns, including impacts to forest lands and wetlands. Located adjacent to the Beaupre Golf Course and bordered by Murray and Norton Roads, the 200-acre subdivision was originally approved in 2011. Numerous map extensions followed, and the final map was on the meeting's consent agenda of items considered routine. And Madrone said he pulled it for discussion because an original environmental review failed to consider the combined impacts of 80 lots.
I would really appreciate it if the developer would, for instance, in the spirit of compromise, agree to a condition whereby the entire property would have a wetland inventory and delineation so that we could see a comprehensive look at how those wetlands interact versus just a parcel-by-parcel evaluation, which would not give us that comprehensive analysis. That would be a small token that wouldn't cost that much to do, and it would really go a long ways towards trying to finalize where the house sites really should be.
But Madrone's proposal immediately ran into resistance. Supervisor Michelle Bushnell faulted him for not flagging the issues sooner, which she said is, quote, very unfair to the developer and staff and to this board. Madrone noted the tight timing between the agenda's issuance and the meeting and said, quote, I really feel a bit insulted that you would suggest I'm trying to do something at the last moment, prompting an apology from Bushnell. But Supervisor Rex Bone also questioned Madrone's proposal and praised the subdivision.
These are going to be good-sized lots. These are going to be great lots for the families. It's going to be great lots for the school district up there. And it's going to be great for Humboldt State, Provident, Open Door, and Mad River, because that's what the doctors and their families are looking for. It's not shopping or anything else. They want to find adequate housing. And what that happens, and then for the other people that have been successful, they move up and their houses are lower. So it's a trickle-down effect. But to throw all this stuff out when somebody has 15 years invested, has met everything that we've asked them to meet, and then we're going to change the rules, 24 hours before it comes to the board. And again, this is a ministerial. That's why it was on the consent calendar, because I think staff of Public Works and Planning are not as concerned as you are. You can tell them they're supposed to be concerned, but they don't seem as concerned if I read this whole report.
Asked to comment, Planning Director John Ford said, the discretionary part of this process was done in 2011, and final map approval is all that remains. Madrone got some backup from Board Chair Mike Wilson, who described lack of analysis of the cumulative impact of 80 lots with septic systems as a big hole. But Chris Dart of the Danco Group, the subdivision's developer, said the project's original approval included a thorough environmental review.
We went through several public hearing processes, lots and lots of testimony. All of the agencies had the opportunity to opine on the project and did. There were mitigations prepared as the result of those comments from the agencies that we were incorporated in the project. Wetland studies were done for the project. We had retained GHD to do those studies. They had studied all of the areas in which the improvements were for the process. Those were all vetted through the Army Corps of Engineers, the Water Quality Control Board, Fish and Game. The sewer systems were evaluated. Every single lot was evaluated.
Madrone acknowledged that individual systems and lots were analyzed, but said what's missing is a cumulative impact analysis of the subdivision as a whole. Making a final try, Madrone asked Danco to do a comprehensive wetland delineation and inventory of the entire property. But Dart said Danco believes wetlands analysis has been adequate. Madrone asked for a continuance, but even Wilson, who nodded to the validity of Madrone's concerns, said he'd vote with staff recommendations, quote, only because I don't feel like bringing it back next week is going to be productive. With that, the final subdivision map was approved in a 4-1 vote, with Madrone voting against. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
This week on Inside Humboldt Courts, a Humboldt County man accused of attempted murder agrees to a 9-year prison term rather than face a second trial. New courtroom testimony reveals disturbing new details in a McKinleyville assault case that's now charged as a kidnapping. And a new lawsuit lands in the middle of an ongoing investigation into a local animal rescue. Ryan Hudson has more.
I'm Ryan Hudson, and this is Inside Humboldt Courts for KMUD News. This week, a homicide case we have followed for months reaches its end. A McKinleyville store incident turns out to be more serious than it first looked. Possible mental health diversion in the Daryl Ray Jones school shooter threats case. And a new lawsuit lands in the middle of the ongoing investigation into Miranda's rescue. We'll start with an update on the case of the People v. James Clayton Atkins Jr. Regular listeners might remember this one. We've been following Atkins' trial for attempted murder since it began back in May. This week, after 16 days of trial, Atkins brought the case to a close. Not with a jury verdict on the final count, but with an admission. He agreed to stipulate to a 9-year aggravated prison term and waived his right to appeal the case later on. In exchange, prosecutors agreed not to pursue the second attempted murder count against him. Atkins had already been found guilty back in June on the bulk of the charges, including attempted murder, assault with a firearm, and several felon in possession counts against him. He remains in custody at the Humboldt County Jail, and sentencing is set for October 6th. Next, the People v. Trevor Scout Kaufman Parker. Some of you may remember a story out of McKinleyville from June, when a man was accused of spraying a Dollar General clerk with lighter fluid after being told to leave the store. At the time, it was reported as a robbery and an assault. We were in the courtroom for Parker's preliminary hearing on August 11th, and the testimony from the witness and the victim in this case paints a much more disturbing and detailed picture. The store clerk, Gavin Smith, testified that after Parker had sprayed him with lighter fluid, he moved to knock the container out of Parker's hands, and that's when Parker put him in a headlock and dragged the store clerk nearly 20 feet around the side of the building into some nearby bushes. The former employee of the dollar store testified that Parker grabbed and pinched him in the groin area during the struggle. He described it in court as the hardest he has ever been pinched. He said he believed Parker was reaching for a weapon and that he was terrified and that he yelled for help 4 times before he was able to break free. That account is why the charges Parker's actually facing look so different from what was initially reported. Now, kidnapping and assault with a caustic chemical, both serious felonies. Judge Lawrence Kaloran found enough evidence to move the case forward. Parker remains in custody on $110,000 bail, and he's due back in court on August 25th. Also, in the case of the People versus Daryl Ray Jones. A quick update on the Daryl Ray Jones matter. This is the man accused of years of criminal threats against multiple Humboldt County schools and businesses. This week, the court held a full hearing on his request for a mental health diversion. Testimony included two alleged victims giving impact statements and expert testimony from a psychologist who had evaluated Jones. For listeners wondering what that actually means, the mental health diversion program isn't an acquittal. If the judge grants it, Jones would go into a court-supervised mental health treatment program instead of heading straight to trial. Should he complete the program successfully, the charges will be dismissed. If he fails to comply with the program or does not complete it successfully, the case picks back up right where it left off, and he could still face trial. The judge did not make a ruling from the bench and instead decided to take the matter under submission with the case continued to August 21st, where the court's ruling is expected to be issued. And finally, now a civil lawsuit has been filed against Shannon Miranda by Rocket Dog Rescue. That's a Bay Area nonprofit who says it transferred dogs to Miranda's facility. The lawsuit accuses Miranda of misrepresenting what would happen to those dogs, alleging he promised training and adoption, and promised he'd notify the rescue before any animal was euthanized. Those promises, the lawsuit says, turned out to be false. That complaint has not been served yet, according to court documents, and so a response has not been filed yet on behalf of Miranda's rescue. This is very much a developing story, and we'll be bringing you more as it moves forward. That's this week's Inside Humboldt Courts edition. As always, everyone named in these reports is presumed innocent unless proven guilty in a court of law. For KMUD News, I'm Ryan Hudson.
Here's Ray Hamill with this week's KMUD News Sports Report.
A familiar face to South Fork fans is returning to the sidelines this fall as the Cubs get set for the local high school football season. Hello and welcome to this week's KMUD News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll have more on the Cubs in just a moment as we take a look ahead to the upcoming football season and break down all nine HDNL programs, as well as a new look schedule for the league and the College of the Redwoods football team, with opening weekend now just 2 weeks away. The South Fork Cubs will welcome back longtime head coach Carl Terrell, who returns to oversee the program after 1 year away. Terrell, who led the team to a North Coast Section Championship in 2023, takes over from Brandon Coburn. Last year, Coburn led South Fork to a 6-4 record, including a 3-2 mark in league play. The Cubs qualified for the NCS playoffs, but lost 52-22 to Cornerstone Christian. Terrell and the Cubs will kick off the new season on a Thursday night, opening at home against California School for the Deaf on September the 3rd. The home opener will be followed by three straight road games at Calistoga, Roseland University Prep, and Cornerstone Christian in a rematch of last year's NCS playoff game. South Fork will once again play eight-person football. The rest of the HDNL, meanwhile, will feature a new-look schedule this fall. All eight of the 11-player programs will play each other once each, with only conference matchups counting in the race for the Big Four and Little Four championships. That's a switch from recent years, when both the Big Four and Little Four each featured six conference games in a home-and-away format. The new schedule will ease travel and scheduling concerns and means HDNL teams will now only have to schedule three out-of-area teams each, with those games all being played early in the campaign. The new season opens on the weekend of August 28 and 29, with most of the league teams in action. Opening weekend sees Del Norte travel to play Oakland High School, while Fortuna opens at home against St. Helena, Ferndale travels to play Anderson, and Hoopa opens at Trinity. All of those games will be played on Friday night. The following afternoon, McKinleyville opens at home against Cloverdale, while the Eureka Loggers are hoping to play on their new all-weather field against Windsor that night. The new field is part of ongoing renovation for the Eureka High sports facilities, which will include new baseball and softball fields opening next spring. Eureka football head coach Sam Edmonds is hoping the new field at Albee Stadium will be completed in time for opening weekend, and if not, then that game will be moved to Cal Poly Humboldt's Redwood Bowl. Edmonds is also hoping the field will be ready in time for the annual pre-league scrimmage, which is scheduled to take place at Albee Stadium on August 22nd. Once again, if the field is not ready, the scrimmage will be moved to McKinleyville High School. St. Bernard's, meanwhile, has a bye on opening weekend and will kick off the new season at home against NCS powerhouse St. Vincent de Paul the following weekend. Conference play for all of the HDNL teams will kick off in October. In the Little Four, defending conference champion Ferndale will look to make it three straight titles, and the Wildcats will go into the new season as red-hot favourites to do so. Last year, the Cats enjoyed one of the most impressive seasons in HDNL history, winning all 10 of their regular season games and outscoring their opponents 647-18. Remarkably, they did not give up any points until the final 2 weeks of the regular season. They continued to roll in the playoffs, winning three straight games on the way to clinching a second NCS championship in 3 years, before eventually falling to Sutter High School in their NorCal championship game. The other three Little Four teams obviously will be hoping to challenge the Cats for this year's conference crown. Hoopa will feature a new head coach in Tashoni Rice, but with only a handful of returning players, it could be a season of adjustment for the Warriors. Rice, however, says he likes a lot of what he's seeing from a deep junior class, and the Warriors should only continue to improve as the season goes on. At McKinleyville, meanwhile, the Panthers will be looking to build on the steps they took under first-year head coach Jason Benge last year. After going winless in back-to-back seasons in 2023 and 2024, the Panthers won 3 of their 10 games last fall, including finishing 1-5 in the Little Four. The Big Four, meanwhile, also welcomes a new coach this fall. Nick White, who was head coach at Del Norte from 2019 to 2022, will be back on the sidelines, taking over from Darren LaFazio. White enjoyed tremendous success during his 4 years in charge of the Warriors, guiding them to their most successful run in program history. He led Del Norte to 3 Big Four championships in his 3 full seasons, while posting an outstanding overall record of 34-8 and going 12-0 in the Big Four. There was no official league during the COVID short in spring season of 2020 while White was in charge. The race for this year's conference, however, should be an exciting one, and all 4 head coaches believe it could be wide open. Defending co-conference champions Fortuna and St. Bernard's should both be in the mix, while the Del Norte Warriors will be hoping to re-establish themselves as a conference contender under White, and the Eureka Loggers will be hoping to put an injury-ravaged 2025 season behind them and compete for a conference title with an experienced roster that includes 20 returning players, all of whom saw playing time a year ago. Switching gears to the college game, College of the Redwoods will also be hoping to challenge for a conference championship this fall. The Corsairs made the switch from the American Division to the more competitive National Division in 2025, and while it took them some time to adjust, they closed out the season strong and proved to the doubters that they belonged there. Head coach Jason White and his players won 3 of their 5 conference games in 2025 and went into the final weekend of action in contention for the conference title. CR will once again play its home games at Cal Poly Humboldt's Redwood Bowl this fall. The Corsairs opened the season on the road at San Jose in late August before playing their home opener the following weekend. And that's this week's KMUD News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
That's all for our news broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our rotation of broadcast engineers, Dennis Marr, Katie Phillips, Bianna Federico, Michael McCaskill, Larry Lashley, and Javier Rodriguez. Also thanks to our reporters for this broadcast, Ray Hamill, Ryan Hudson, and Daniel Mintz. KMUD News is now on streaming platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can also follow us on social media at KMUD News, including Facebook and Instagram. Do you have issues important to you that deserve more attention? Are there stories we're missing or that you're curious about? You can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingtao, Wailaki, Wiat, Wilcut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to the region. I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.